Hello and welcome to the Ontario Animal Health Network's Veterinary Podcast. We're going to be chatting with some of Ontario's experts about a few issues related to practical diagnosis and testing for people in the field. I'm Melanie Barham, coordinator for the Ontario Animal Health Network, and my co-interviewer is Andy Vince, pathologist of the Animal Health Lab in Guelph.
We're here with Dr. Kathy Bauman of OVC. Kathy has just wrapped up some new research determining sensitivity and specificity of Yoni's tests in small ruminants. Dr. Murray Hazlett has also joined us from the Animal Health Lab. Murray is one of our pathologists who has led research on small ruminants in the past and sees a lot of small ruminant cases. Kathy, can you quickly tell us how Yoni's presents in small ruminants?
Sure, Andy, thanks. This is a very relevant topic, especially with the results of our study just coming out. Yoni's has been a significant issue that the dairy cattle and the beef cattle industry have been dealing with for a long time, and it's only recently that we're taking a closer look with small ruminants. With our recent study, when we interviewed producers, less than 10% of them felt that this was an issue on their farm. Yet when we did our prevalence study, we found that over 80% of goat producers and over 65% of sheep producers had at least one case on their farm. So it's a very under-recognized disease, and the primary reason is the clinical signs that we see in small ruminants. They differ quite dramatically from those seen in cattle. In cattle, the primary sign is intractable diarrhea that doesn't resolve with treatment. In small ruminants, we very rarely see diarrhea till the end stages of disease, and probably less than 20% of the animals exhibit diarrhea even at that point in time. So the primary sign we see in small ruminants is wasting. And the other thing in small ruminants, we're dealing with a lot of other infectious diseases that can also appear as wasting. We have caprine, arthritis, encephalitis, mani visna in sheep. We have intrathoracic caseous lymphadenitis. They can all present as wasting, dental disease, parasites. The list goes on and on. So producers can be dealing with a lot of cases of wasting and really cannot be sure exactly what they're dealing with. And often it can be due to yonis.
So, Kathy, what tests are available right now for diagnosing yonis disease in small ruminants?
Really good question. We have a multitude of tests available. The big important thing is that they have not all been evaluated or validated in small ruminants to date. So a lot of these tests were initially validated in the dairy cattle or the cattle industry in general. And it's really important that when we use these tests on different species that they're then in turn validated on that specific species. So we're using a lot of the same tests. We're using fecal tests such as culture and PCR. We're using tests on serum such as our ELISA tests. And we're also using tests on milk. The ELISA test would be there. We've done some experimental studies as well on bulk tank milk, but they're currently still in the research phase. Your key, you have to remember, though, your ultimate gold standard test is postmortem. If at that point euthanizing the animal is not an option, then we can progress to the antemortem tests I just mentioned. The one test that we're not traditionally using anymore is the AGID test, the agar gel immunodiffusion. It used to be the gold standard as an antemortem test for many, many years. The reagents are getting more and more difficult to get a hold of, so the test is currently no longer available. But the good news is that we've been able to demonstrate that the ELISA tests are as effective, if not more effective, in both goats and sheep.
If I recall correctly from vet school, fecal culture was considered the gold standard test for Yoni's disease. Is that still the case?
You're right, Andy. I remember being taught that in vet school as well. It definitely used to be. In cattle, it's a much more practical test. Most animals will test positive before 49 days if they are going to test positive. The problem in small ruminants is the bacteria tends to grow more slowly, especially in sheep. And so we found in our study that 50% of the samples tested positive or cultured positive after the 49-day time period. We ended up culturing most of these samples for 8 months, which logistically, out in practice, is just not practical. Owners are just not willing to wait that length of time, or can they possibly if they're trying to get these animals into their herd or flock. The other concern is culturing these samples for such a long period of time greatly increases the cost. So if we can have an ELISA test run for the results can be turned around within a week for a much lower cost.
So if I'm considering using one of the ELISA tests, then how do I decide whether or not I should be using milk or serum?
This really depends on the type of species you have. We found with goats that the serum ELISA had higher sensitivity or was able to detect diseased animals a higher proportion of the time. So serum ELISA is definitely going to be your test of choice with goats. With milk, we found that the serum ELISA and the milk ELISA pretty much performed equally well. So again, with that situation, it would be more a sense of convenience. Obviously, with the serum ELISA, it would require a veterinarian to come out to obtain the blood samples, unless the owner was really proficient in that sense. Whereas milk-based testing is much more convenient from the producer standpoint and can be arranged through the local milk testing company.
So Murray, let's talk about postmortem testing. What animals ideally should be chosen for PM if Yoni's is the principal differential diagnosis?
I recommend animals that are thin and wasting. And you need to remember that diarrhea isn't always present in these small ruminants that have Yoni's disease. Because of the distribution of the bacteria, they're in the submucosa, not overlying epithelium. A freshly dead animal is not really required. An animal that's dead, say, 6 to 8 hours in the summer, or 1 to 2 days in the winter, should be fine to check for Yoni's disease, as long as you take the proper samples. You can even do this testing on an animal that's been frozen. Although a diagnosis of Yoni's disease can be made on a moderately autolyzed animal, other intestinal diseases may not be identified if the animal is not relatively fresh.
If a veterinarian is doing a PM in the field, what samples should they take?
The most important sample is the ileum, right anterior to the cecum. But, you know, common mistakes are not sending in enough samples. So I suggest, say, 2 pieces of spiral colon and 1 of cecum. And most important are the small intestinal sections, the one just anterior to the cecum, and at least 3 and up to 6 pieces of small intestine at various levels and 1 to 2 centimeters in length. In most intestinal diseases, you're best off to open the intestine to expose the mucosa to formalin. This minimizes the autolysis. You can try to choose sections of an ileum that are thickened. This could be from edema in the area or from the inflammation. As I mentioned, try to get close to the cecum. The serosa sometimes may have a cerebriform pattern. That means it's kind of bumpy from the outside. It's also possible that the intestine appears to be normal. In goats, we often see lesions also in the liver. These appear as small white foci, but you may not see those. It's not a bad idea to sample liver also. And you may also see lymphadenitis, inflammation in the lymph node. So if you can get a section of lymph node, especially near the ileocecal junction, that's always helpful. One more thing, Andy, I might mention is it doesn't cost more to send in more pieces of tissue. And one of the things that makes us cry as pathologists is if they have a good sample and they send in 1 piece of ileum, and we don't see the bacteria there, our level of confidence in diagnosing this as Yoni's free is much less than if we see 6 sections. So the price doesn't change. So if you send in more sections of intestine, you get better bang for your buck. And also you can still send in 3 animals on that same submission. Just try to keep them in 3 separate jars. I'd also like to remind people that the formalin to tissue ratio should be 10 parts formalin to 1 part tissue as a minimum. If you want to send in additional jars on the same animal, that's fine. Just label them clearly. And again, there's no additional charge.
Thank you, Murray.
You're welcome, Andy.
So, Kathy, now that we know a little bit more about how these different tests perform, as a practitioner, how should I know whether I should be testing individual animals that I suspect are ill or deciding to do a more flock-level approach to diagnosis?
It's important from the beginning for a testing program to be successful that the producer and the veterinarian both have a conversation about what the ultimate goals are. With the small ruminant industry, there's very low profit margins, so it's important to keep in mind that we have to conserve resources. We found the three main questions that producers bring up are, first of all, do I even have the disease in my herd or flock? Secondly, is how bad is it? So what's my prevalence level? With low prevalence, eradication is a possibility or severe control, whereas high prevalence herds, we find that control measures are just the most important intervention. And then lastly, if I've implemented a control program, am I now free of the disease? Or am I bringing my prevalence down? So in a sense, we're assessing whether the management interventions have been successful.
Okay, so let's run through the scenarios for sheep and goats. In the first scenario, the question is, do I have it? The producer doesn't know if they have yonis in their herd or not. How would you recommend vets in the field proceed with testing?
If we're interested in detecting disease at the farm level, your ultimate test would be to postmortem 3 to 5 of your thinnest animals on the farm. That's your best way of being able to diagnose the disease. However, if the producer doesn't want to go to that extent in order to diagnose, your next possibility would be to select some animals. Again, preferably the thinnest animals on the farm will give you the best, most accurate results. But to select, statistically, we would recommend 60 animals, whether your herd size is 60 or as high as 1,000. However, a minimum of, absolute minimum of 20 animals would be required. From there, once we selected those animals, we would recommend that you test in the goats. We would use the serum prionics test, and with the sheep, the serum IDEX.
So, Kathy, I'm on the farm, and I'm looking at the flock. I'm trying to decide which 20 animals I should be testing. How do I make that decision?
Well, in order to have the most accurate opportunity of diagnosing the disease, it's best to target your testing towards the thin and wasted animals. We want to ensure, however, that these animals are over 2 years of age. The reason behind this is that this disease has a very long incubation period. Animals are unlikely to be showing symptoms of the disease or to test positive before 2 years of age. The other condition that can interfere with testing is animals that have just come into lactation. So they've just given birth. Production of colostrum will definitely affect the milk ELISA test results, as well as it can sometimes influence the serum ELISA immediately postpartum.
All right, Kathy. So I've got my test results from my 20 samples back from the lab. I have some numbers. How do I use this information in conversation and in planning with the producer?
You know, in an ideal world, it would be really nice if we could turn that into a prevalence for the producer, but it's just not that simple. We do know that for every clinical case, we probably have 5 to 10 subclinical cases of disease present in the herd. So it's the most important message we need to give to producers is this is just the tip of the iceberg. The disease is much worse than we actually can see up front. Statistically, we can turn that into a rough idea of prevalence. You can do it simply by dividing herd size by the number of samples you've taken. For example, if you had a herd size of 200, you took 20 samples, divided out, that's 10. If you had 2 positives, 2 times 10 is approximately 20% prevalence. The main thing is that the producers just realize how severe the disease is, because it's a big difference between having a prevalence of 5%, because eradication and getting rid of this disease out of their farm may be something that's on the horizon. However, if we're dealing with a herd or flock that has 40, 50% prevalence, we're not going to get rid of this disease overnight, and the producer has to realize they're in this, trying to control this disease for the long haul. So that covers herd level testing to determine if I have disease, and then identifying the degree to which that farm is infected. So where do we go from there? Well, we want to get on those farms yearly to ensure that the producer is implementing the management interventions to prevent disease. And then to ensure they're on board with those control programs is to follow that up with yearly testing. So we want to continue to postmortem all wasting cases or unknown causes of death on that farm. We want to continue to sample ideally 20 to 60 animals with a serum, either prionics or IDEX ELISA, based on the animal species. And then also coming into play, which is really important, is preventing more disease from coming onto the farm. So we really want to come up with a biosecurity plan for bringing new animals onto the farm, which would involve quarantining at a minimum of 30 days and testing of those animals prior to being introduced to the flock, which leads us more into the screening and the individual animal testing. So one key point I just want to make before we leave herd level testing is we just have no test, even postmortem, that can guarantee, and this needs to be really emphasized, that we can guarantee that a farm does not have disease present. So with some other diseases, we can say we're absolutely free of them, but that's the one thing with yonis that is different from a lot of the other diseases, is we cannot guarantee that a farm doesn't have it, even if all the animals that are tested come back negative.
I understand there's a yonis control program getting started in Ontario. Can you tell us anything about it?
Currently, there are a lot of yonis control programs throughout the world and actually within every province within Canada in place for dairy cattle. To date, I think the only control program we know of is currently involving sheep down in Australia. With Ontario, we're in the early stages of getting a control program up and running for the dairy sheep and the dairy goats. It's really important. It's a multiple-pronged approach. It involves some component of individual and herd-level testing of animals, as well as the implementation of management strategies to prevent transmission between animals already on the farm, if they have it, and preventing the introduction of the disease from animals coming off the farm, coming onto the farm. One of the major problems that sheep and goat producers are dealing with is this whole need to constantly bring breeding stock onto the farm. Artificial insemination has not been widely uptaken by the majority of goat producers, even though it's quite easy to be implemented. Sheep producers, it's a different story just due to the cervical conformation of the sheep and how expensive it is to implement on different farms. So getting back to that, it's really important to come up with a biosecurity strategy of how to deal with these animals that are coming onto the farm, quarantining, testing, keeping them separated for a certain time period and until we absolutely are certain of their disease status. The one thing to keep in mind with the control programs that are currently in place, whether it's dairy cattle or with sheep, is that they are all voluntary. And in the future, the control program that would be implemented in Ontario would also be voluntary.
So the problem that you've mentioned is with introducing new animals to the herd, the possibility that A, they may carry this pathogen onto the farm, or B, they may come in contact with this new pathogen once they're introduced to the farm. So what should we do when we're introducing these new animals to the herd?
You're right, Andy. When we're bringing a new animal on, it's really critical that we know the status of that animal before introducing it to the other animals. Because the incubation period for paratuberculosis is so long, it can run anywhere from a year to 2 years to sometimes 5 years, it's just not practical to keep that animal isolated from the other animals in the meantime. The best thing we can do is place these animals into quarantine for about 30 days just to identify if they have any other kind of acute illnesses such as respiratory or diarrhea type illness. Within that 30 days, ideally, we want to test that animal. And I think it's better to think of this as a whole herd health problem. Yeah, we should definitely test those animals for paratuberculosis, but this would also be an ideal time to test it for CAE or Mativisna, if that's also a concern, or to do a fecal at that point in time just to know the parasite status of that animal. So you really want to look at it as a big whole herd concern. Ideally, as I alluded to, that the incubation period is very long. So if the animal is less than a year of age, the animal would only be shedding at that point. It would not have a serological response. So if it's shedding into the feces, the ideal test would be a fecal PCR. What we want to do is collect those the samples with a dry glove. We don't want to use lube or anything else because that can affect the results and inhibit the PCR reaction. So dry glove, individual glove for each animal, because we can have cross reactions from the PCR of one animal to the other if we have the same glove. If the animal is over a year of age, ideally what I would do is to run two tests. I would run the serum ELISA test in conjunction with the fecal PCR, and that would just give you the highest accuracy possible by running the two tests at the same time. So just getting back to our biosecurity issues, though, it's really important that when producers are purchasing the animals, if they have to, is that they're purchased from farms with a reputable history of testing their own animals for yonis and for other diseases. We have a lot of producers that are buying indiscriminately, and so if we could really encourage them to question where they're purchasing their animals from and knowing the disease status of those herds. So after quarantining and testing new arrivals to the herd or flock, if they've tested negative, the key is that animal can still go on to shed or test positive later in its life. So you want to be really careful where you introduce these animals and ideally isolate them to as few animals, to contact with as few animals as possible. So that in future, if he does test positive, you know who he's come in contact with, that you can direct your testing towards those animals. So in an ideal black and white world, animals would either test positive or they would test negative. But with the ELISA testing, because the value comes back as numerical, it's very important in my mind that the producers receive the numerical values of their testing so that they know that some animals that are in that gray zone, that they need to be watching these animals for seroconversion later on. They can choose to isolate those animals from the main negative herd, or at least from the young stock that are coming on board. But the key is these guys that are testing in the gray zone need to be monitored long term. We need to also keep track of their offspring. At minimum, once an animal tests positive, we want to cull the last kid or lamb born to that animal. But all offspring throughout that doe or yo's lifetime needs to be monitored and at least tested for the disease showing up later in life. So I know earlier I mentioned that with screening of animals, especially those over a year of age, that we can run two tests. So we can run the PCR and the ELISA at the same time. So the question always comes up, what if we're positive on one and negative on the other? Well, you can rerun the test within a month, or you can wait 5 to 6 months, continue to keep that animal separate from the herd and retest at that 6 month time.
I'd like to thank Kathy Bauman and Murray Hazlett for talking with us. Additional information about submitting great field necropsy samples can be found on the AHL website under Lab Notes. Alternately, you can always call in to speak with the pathologist on call.
Thanks for tuning in today for the first Small Ruminant Veterinary Podcast brought to you by the Ontario Animal Health Network, or OWEN.